most of us who knew him. For other people, he's a veteran monk, author, and spiritual guide. Travels throughout the world, sharing knowledge gained from 4 decades of bhakti yoga practice and dedication to spiritual entrepreneurialism. Speaking at corporations, universities, and non-profits, he teaches universal principles of personal spiritual development. Renowned for his wisdom and inspiring speech, he has a way of making ancient yoga wisdom and practices relevant and accessible. Today's talk about advanced receptivity, joining the receptivity revolution, we are going to learn more about how to apply the principles and hear the signal of success through the noise and attune our awareness to the abundance flowing through our life. So let's hear more from him. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Great to be back here at Salesforce, where the positive energy is always flowing. I always feel it here. So it's great to see you all. Thanks for joining. Before we go much further, just if you could let me know one of the reasons that was in your mind for coming today. What was your impetus? And by the way, we have microphones, so we'll get it to you fast so that everyone can hear really clearly. So what brought you here today? Yes. Fantastic. Thanks. You made my day. And right here.
She invited
me. Nice. Why did you invite him?
I am studying all different types of values and reciprocity, if I'm even pronouncing that correctly,
yeah.
Is something that I would like to learn more about.
Oh, fantastic. Great.
Seems like this is a grounding kind of a course, so that's a
Yeah, I like the way you put it, grounding. Yeah. It could be involved, yes.
Yeah,
if it's for the people online. They complain if they can't hear you, because what you have to say is actually really valuable. So.
To practice mindfulness and to increase your sensitivity, to be open to gaining knowledge.
Oh, beautiful. Perfect. Anybody else? Just a tip when you're... In my presentations, I ask for a lot of reflection because actually it's 50% me and 50% you. It creates this augmentation of the energy and ideas and things like that. And also, when you have a thought in your mind and you want to share it, and you do, it brings you brings your energy level up a lot higher. You become more receptive, actually, when you share. So, anybody else want to try it? One last shot at it? Okay, let's start by doing a little centering. And remarkably, it's so easy to do. As actually, we are containers, and what's inside us is actually more valuable than what's outside of us. And sometimes I miss that because I'm really outwardly focused. So one of the techniques of mindfulness really is just to be mindful. And that means... in some sense, to be introspective, another word I really like. Introspective is just what it means. Specter means to see or to look. And intro means in. So let's try it just for a second, because you don't have to really be highly educated in the science of meditation to look within and just see what's there. So you all want to try it? Yes? Okay. It's like when you sit in the exit row on a plane, they need a verbal yes, that you're willing to help in the time of emergency. Okay, so please close your eyes and then just sit up a little straighter than you were a second ago, and you'll notice something right away when you do that, and that is that your mind comes to more focus. Interestingly, when you straighten your spine, all the senses in the body, including the mind, say, okay, something important's going to happen. And now just move your focus of concentration to your breath. And just watch your breath and notice that you're breathing. And also notice that your mind has a life of its own, and it will tend to explore and go off into various places. Part of introspection in this practice is just to gently bring your attention back to where it was on your breath. And it can sometimes help when you're breathing to mentally say out when you exhale and mentally say in when you inhale. And now while you're noticing your breath, think for a minute how many times you inhale and exhale every day. And even at night, when you're asleep, the process goes on. It might be more accurate to say that you're being breathed rather than that you are breathing, because you really can't stop breathing. And then just take a moment to appreciate the fact that you do have breath, that is, oxygen to breathe. It's coming as a gift. And as you breathe, all the cells in your body are breathing with you. And now I'm going to say a mantra, which is meant to bring us to the center, the heart center. It's spelled A-U-M in Sanskrit. It's one syllable. I'll say the mantra, and then when you hear it, if you like, you can join in and just listen to the vibration and keep your mind absorbed in the sound. Om. I'm going to say it again. Everyone who'd like to, please join in. Om. One more time. And just feel how the vibration goes through your mind and body, and bring your attention back to your breath. And then realize that you have a choice where to place your attention. That is your main freedom in life, to decide where to put your own attention. And bring your attention to your two palms and rub your palms together. Notice that you can transfer the attention from your breath to your palms. Make a little friction. Notice the heat. And then slowly open your eyes, come back into the room. And these experiments in introspection are experiments that you can do at any time. Of course, while you're working, you might not be able to close your eyes and so forth, but we can always focus inwardly and notice what's there. Oftentimes, experienced teachers of introspection and meditation have described our inner world like an ocean. I heard recently that oceanographers have only cataloged 10% of the life that's in the ocean. I'm not sure how they came to that number, but it means there's a lot more out there, even when we're looking, that we don't see. So inwardly also, there's so much there that I miss. The other day when I was standing in a shop, I saw an elderly couple walking down the street, and as they passed the front window, the man looked in, and I thought he was looking at me, but then I noticed he was adjusting his hair in the reflection. And I had this sudden realization of the way in which I'm looking at the surface of my consciousness and sort of looking at how I look physically, externally. I'm thinking about my life situation. But if he had concentrated a little more, he would have seen beyond the reflection and inside that there was somebody looking back at him. And in the process of introspection, meditation, one might have a kind of deeper experience by looking beyond just what's going on in my life. This is kind of the reflection on the window. And who am I? How do I look right now? Or how do I feel right now? And trying to see our life within, our actual conscious being. So it's as simple as that, to take time every day to look within and notice the difference between my life situation and my life. And also, one can do a test to see, am I the body or something else? Because the body, if you look at it very carefully, is a machine. It's a vehicle. It has pumps. We notice it has a pump that's going up and down and bringing oxygen in and carbon dioxide out. And that's going on pretty much automatically, like a breathing machine and so forth. And am I that, or am I the observer that's watching that go on? So this can help us to be in the state of receptivity, because I realize actually my true alignment when I see who I am, beyond just the reflection and beyond just the mechanical body or the mind, which is really like more like software that's moving around and performing various kinds of functions, algorithms all the time. And I can even notice that. So now, before I go into some of the prepared statements that I had, does anybody want to reflect back about the little session of introspection that we had? Any kind of reflection is okay. Like my teacher in junior high school, Mr. Schumacher, he used to say, okay, now write an essay. And someone would say, I don't know what to write about. You go, write about that. So any reflection will do, but it keeps the energy going between the two of us. So anybody has a reflection about the process of introspection, please go ahead.
Most yes. Of the time, at least to me, what we think the introspection, it's really looking into the mind, right? What the mind is telling and
yes.
so on. And we sometimes seem to confuse what the mind is telling us with what we're feeling us, which becomes another pain and suffering. So relate to something as introspection, something that is not.
Yes, it's a really good point, and it's something that we bring up in the classes that we do on meditation, that the mind is like a screen. And as a screen, it's an instrument that's reflecting back to us what we're putting on. Now, if the screen is distorted, it's going to give us a distorted image of what's actually going on. For instance, if you look in a mirror, and the mirror is distorted, and this happened to me some time ago, but was memorable. I was in an airplane flying somewhere long distance, and I woke up. I went into those tiny little bathrooms they have on the plane, and I looked in the mirror, and my head was lopsided. And I thought, this is a disaster. I'm a monster now. It must have been the way I was sleeping on the seat or something like that. And that was in a state of kind of half awake. And then when I noticed that when I moved my head this way, it looked okay again. And it was a blemish on the mirror. So in a similar way, when my mind is in a certain distorted state, the reflection that I see of reality will be distorted also, and I can be disturbed by it. Thank you. So now I'm going to move on to a few points. Yes?
Can you use the hand mic?
You want me to use the hand mic because this isn't working?
Not, okay.
I can do it. All right. You want both, or should I take one off?
One is okay.
Okay. One less contraption on me now. So let's go into the concepts of advanced receptivity. Again, it's a simple concept because we are actually we're receivers and we're receiving all the time. But to what degree are we receiving? And what are we receiving? And what does the word receive mean anyway? It comes from Latin and it means to take. And what are we taking away from the world is a simpler way to put it. And what are we actually getting out of this whole thing? We're going through day after day, week after week, month after month, but what am I actually taking in? So the idea behind advanced receptivity is to increase your capacity to receive the great lessons of life, the abundance that's all around us. There are things all around us that we can notice even if we think of the physical world. Like, what are some of the things people are after in the physical world that are all around us? Let me help. I'll suggest money. People would like to have more money. Well, air is there, yeah. But something, you know, even a little more cliche, money and power, okay. Okay, so money and power. And how much money can we get? Tell us, how much can we get? Not much. Okay, well, that's a good answer because, I mean, the fact is, first of all, no matter how much we get, it's not much because there's always an infinite number ahead of what we've already gotten. So it's always like that. It doesn't matter if you have $100 or $1 million or $1 billion, it's always not much compared to infinity. So it's a losing proposition to try to get enough anyway. But let's just say for the context of this theory that I'm presenting today about receptivity, which is like, how do we receive? Let's take something as mundane as money. It's, of course, mundane, but extremely important in our lives. So what is the way that we receive money, and how do you get more of it? The answer is being more receptive. You have to be able to take it, right? So are there ways, as an example, that you could earn more money? How?
Well, there are many ways.
Got to be quick. Okay.
There are many ways. One is you sort of suck up to your boss. Another way is to just improve your skills and market them.
Okay.
Either through employment or through entrepreneurship.
Both of those are very valid and suggested in numerous books. I don't know the terminology, sucking up to the boss, but the fact is that when you're more open and humble with people that you're working with, those who are advisors, mentors, bosses, and so forth, they tend to pour out more from what they have. And that's a tendency of everybody. And also, what does it actually mean if you get more education? Well, in the context of this theory I'm presenting today, I would say it makes you more receptive. To what? Knowledge, skills, ability, and so forth. You took the time to make yourself more receptive. You're a better receiver, and you're able to transmit more of what you get because of education. Would you, anybody disagree with that? Okay, we're still in the game. So, yes, please.
I did recently read something that there were four ways to make money. The first one was what our colleague said right here about being an employee. The second one was being self-employed, having, you know, an e-commerce business or being a contractor. The third one was having your own business. And the fourth one was investing. So those are some different ways.
Yes, very helpful. Okay. So in all those ways, even as you enter into them, some people do well, some people don't do so well even with investing or starting their own businesses and so forth. So the core point here is that it's an adjustment we make. Let's say the whole city is filled up with money. And I'm going to move away from, you know, these very practical examples in a minute, into more ethereal types of things. But the fact is that we can only get a certain amount of it. unless you forcibly try to take it, but that never works. I mean, I remember as a kid seeing movies of somebody robbing a bank and then thinking, like, how much can you actually enjoy it? They'd have to hide out for the next 10 years, and then they're still looking for them. And so you didn't really receive anything. You took it by force. So to be receptive to the resources that are in the world, then I have to adjust myself so that it can actually go in. I can actually take it, right? Okay, so let's start with the closures. Closure means that I'm cutting off my receptivity. And I'm going to suggest to you several areas that I close myself down to that cause me to resist the gifts of the world. And the first one is a mantra that many of you might have heard, which is, I know that. Everyone say, I know that.
I know that.
Or you can say, I already know that. Say that one. There you have your choice, a three-word mantra or a four-word mantra. The four-word mantra, I already know that. So how have you ever been in a situation where you're speaking to somebody and they're starting to tell you something, and you're in your mind, you say, I already know that. Okay, five people admitted it. I do it all the time. I notice my mind, somebody starts to tell me something, and my mind's saying, I already know that, I already know that, I already know that. And whenever you stop talking, I'm going to tell you what I know. And instead of actually listening, I put up this sign that says, I already know that, I already know that. This is one of the ways that I remain closed to the nuance of knowledge in the world, because people actually are giving me information. Even novices in a science can offer insight from a unique perspective that can actually be helpful, that I've never heard before. But if I take the position that I already know that, then I don't get it. I'm closed. My receptivity is closed. So here are the antidotes to this first closure, and I call these power openings. Life is a mystery. Every moment and every situation is unique. How does that strike you? I mean, just think about it for a moment. In fact, my name, I'm introduced as Vaisheshik. It's a Sanskrit name. I took that name when I took vows many years ago in the monastery. And the word actually comes from Sanskrit, which means Vishesha. Vishesha means unique or specific, and it refers to the fact that we live in a universe, in a world in which every particle is unique. Every person is unique. Every situation is unique. There's not one sunset or sunrise that's the same as another. There's not one conversation that's identical to another. No relationship that's absolutely identical to another. Everything at every moment is an unfolding flow of uniqueness. I just want to know how that strikes you. Have you thought of that before, that every moment is unique? This means to be really fascinated by what's happening at every second. If I had full realization of the uniqueness of everything that's happening to me in life, I'd be fully fascinated by what's happening. Do you agree with the premise that I'm presenting? Okay, so tell me why you think the premise is okay. What is your name?
Arvin.
Marvin.
Arvin.
Arvin.
Yeah. No, I just realized a while ago that there are no situations that are unique. I remember reading Kafka a long time ago, and there was a quote, my favorite quote, that struck me that it drew by. It's life is in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
That's where life is happening. But essentially, every moment counts. Life is in this moment. And it struck me that every moment is unique. There's no two moments that are alike. And so I tried, not always successfully, to live like that.
Arvid, I like the way you put things. That was really helpful. That point about the uniqueness bringing us into the moment, because that's where we actually are all the time. We're right here, right now, right? And oftentimes I'm thinking of the future, I'm thinking of the past, but I'm never in the moment. So my point here is that to say I know that, how could I know everything if everything's unique at every moment? So this is one of the ways in which to stay open to the mysteries of the world, that anything can happen at any moment. Yes?
Yeah, just a comment.
Please.
So when I heard you say this,
comes to mind a meeting I had about an hour or two and a half, 2 hours ago, where I said just this. I cut somebody off who was giving me perspective, and in thinking this through, you know, and I kind of caught myself a little bit, but yeah, I know that. And I in my brain, I kind of threw me off because if it's something I already know, you don't have to retell me something I already know. But thinking through like this, you know, we were in this every day, right? And that particular person could have had just a little bit of a different, unique perspective that could have, if I was receptive to that unique perceptive, even if it was something my brain told me, oh, I know that, and stopped listening, maybe I could have gained some different insight to a little bit of something I didn't know about what I thought I knew.
Yep.
But could have let her potentially finish her story.
Yes.
So.
Perfect. And it's it's like a flip, a switch you can flip from, you know, turn off the I already know that switch and the mantra that's going in my head. And that makes me more receptive to what's actually happening right now. I mean, to put it in a practical way, you're gonna have to listen anyway. You might as well listen attentively and see what's there in the vibration that the person is putting out. Louis Pasteur once said that great discoveries come only unto the prepared mind. So one of the ways that we're preparing ourselves for receptivity is talking about it right now. You won't be the same when you walk out and you hear the mantra in your head, which goes off, I already know that, I already know that, I already know that. And you'll step back just a little bit and be more observant and more receptive to what people are saying. And that's very important because the gifts of the world are abundant and they're coming in at every minute. But I'm not getting all of them because I'm closing myself with the great closure called, I already know that. So if I already know that, then I'm closed. And the question for opening isn't the world unique at every moment? And therefore, how could I already know something? At every moment, it's unfolding. How can I claim to already know that? The second closure is I have something. So if I already have something, let me put it like this. If somebody offers somebody and they go, I'm good. If you're already good, you don't need anything else. You're not open to receive. There's a way in which I can easily feel satisfied in the moment. In New York, they call it copping a lean. Have you ever heard that? It's an old phrase, probably from the 70s or something like that. But let me give you the image. So it's a nice day, and you're driving in your car. Maybe it's a new car, and you got the window down. The music's up loud, so the endorphins are going. And you just put a deposit in your bank account, got a full refrigerator, you lean out the door, out the window, and you're driving with one finger, and you're thinking, I'm good. I got everything. So this idea that, that's called copping a lean, because you're leaning out, and like, that's your profile. Like, I'm good. I got everything. When you have everything, then there's nothing more to come in. Whereas when you're hungry, when you're open, then you're seeing the gifts of the world more readily. So the antidote to this, and this is a fact, and when you hear it, you'll recognize that it's a fact, and that is that every single thing we have is on loan. Would you accept that premise? I mean, there are laws, and you can say possession is 9/10 of the law, and I lawfully own my property, and so forth. But in an existential sense, do we really own anything? What are your thoughts? Is it an unassailable premise that everything that we have is on loan? Yeah? Like, what things do you have that are on loan? Yes. What is your name?
Kelsey.
I can agree to this just because at the end of the day, like, when you're gone from this lifetime, you're not taking anything else with you. So pretty much everything that you own right now is just for a time being.
Kelsey went all the way existential on us. Very good. Because looking from a wider perspective, which is like, you know, when you leave this world, basically, which is a mystery in and of itself, partly like, when's that going to happen? I have no idea. I didn't sign a lease when I got the body in the first place. that I remember. There was no agreement like how long I get to keep it. What to speak of anything else I have? Anything I have in my possession, I can lose at any second. Yes or yes? Okay, confirmed. So this idea of I have everything. Don't think you have anything. This is one of the ways to be receptive, interestingly. And I'll go into this. That there's actually a principle behind it in Sanskrit called akinchana. So the third closure is life is against me. Life is against me. Have you heard that phrase in your mind or from anybody else in any iteration or manifestation that life is against me? Have you ever felt like that at any time? Even today? Yes.
I don't know about life, but do you generally feel like sometimes the establishment can be against you? Like you sign a legal agreement that's generally lopsided. You know, you want to do something. Generally, the rules aren't really in your favor. Mm. You need to find like paths which are unconventional.
Yeah, you could see that there people have thought long and hard about it and made plans to make sure that you only get so far ahead or that they realize most of the profit and so forth, so you could feel like that's against me. Are there other senses, existentially or otherwise, that you could feel life is against you? Yes?
I remember Einstein said one thing very famously. He said one of the most important decisions one has to make is to decide whether or not the universe is hostile.
Oh, that's such a nice point. And we could put it another way in that context is, am I a victim? Am I a victim or something else? So the openings, the power openings to life is against me and I'm a victim are, failure is my teacher. Please say that. I look for the lesson in every failure. I am a student in the classroom called cosmic sensitivity training. Let me tell you what I mean by that. I mean, have you ever heard of sensitivity training? Yeah, so one way of looking at the universe and my role in it is like I'm engaged in a cosmic sensitivity training course. Everything that happens to me is meant to refine me, to bring me to higher values, to come to this sense of compassion, of actually integrity. Because let's just talk about the law of karma, which is generally known as like the law of action and reaction. Whatever I do, for whatever I do to others, there's an equal and opposite reaction. How would that be sensitivity training in one sentence? I do something to somebody else, it comes back to me. What would you say? Karma, yes. And how is it training me to be sensitive? Have you ever seen on the internet people put up like instant karma? Guy throws something and breaks somebody's window and it bounces back, hits him in the head. Everyone's like, yay, great. Trying to break into a car and then, you know, the person, something happens to him right away. There's kind of this sense of justice when we see that. People, you know, cheer for it. People love vigilante films anyway. So there's this idea that, you know, what I do, I'm actually responsible for it because I have free will to put myself out there in various ways. And if I cause harm to others, then there's ways in which I feel what it's like to be harmed and so forth. And at some time I start to calm down, to center, and to become more and more refined. So this is what I mean by cosmic sensitivity training. And finally, here's a mantra that I learned many, many years ago when I was listening to an interview on NPR. And someone gave this statement, and I said, I'm keeping it. It's, I live to be corrected. Dare you say it? You want to try it? Go ahead, say it. I live to be corrected. It's hard even saying it, isn't it? Because my mantra is like, I live to correct others. And why don't they listen to me? But this is a whole new concept. You know, this is receptivity, actually. Because if I'm open to be corrected, then I can constantly improve. Have you ever been with a teacher and then the teacher says, no, not there, put your finger over here, not there. You're learning an instrument or something. There's a visceral reaction maybe and I'm thinking like, don't tell me what to do. I know what to do. I can figure this out on my own. Why not just, obviously, if you're going to put yourself in that circumstance to learn something, be totally open to what the teacher says. Well, how about expanding that and being open to life and the circumstances and the situations that come to me unsought, and take those as learning experiences? I live to be corrected. So when I heard that, the person was sort of unceremoniously, it was on Michael Krasny, and there was a person from Oklahoma, and he was speaking about a particular circumstance, and he said, Okies. Now, Okie is kind of a slang for being from Oklahoma, but the guy's from Oklahoma, so I guess in the realm of political correctness, he had a right to say it. But Michael Krasny stopped him, and he said, no, you can't say Okie because people might take offense. And he goes, okay, I live to be corrected. And in that moment, I realized the beauty of that mantra. And now you can use it too. If you have a relationship with somebody, you'll really surprise them the next time they straighten you out. And you say,
I live to be corrected.
Yeah, keep saying it. And you'll notice that it changes the flow in your life from blocking to actually taking in. It's remarkable how much can be done with that mantra. Okay, now, since I really know how to chew up a clock, here are six principles to receiving. And I'm going to go through these since, unfortunately for me, I have a limited amount of time with you today. There's six principles that I've listed here, and these are researched from various wisdom literatures and also from modern secular wisdom, and the two have a nexus. And here they are. One is called the humility principle. And this is based on an attitude that I'm not the controller. So if I have a concept that everything should go my way, which is basically that I'm the controller, and I'm making the world move, and I have a plan, and it should go according to my plan. Have you ever felt like the world should go according to your plan? Has the world ever gone against your plan? From time to time. When it moves really rapidly against your plan, then you call it a disaster. When it goes gradually against your plan, then you call it the grind of life, and so forth. But if you take a completely different perspective in life and say, I'm not the controller. I may have some plan, but I'm really open to the way the world moves against me, because I'm not the one who gets to make the ultimate plan. So this humility is kind of a way of keeping yourself in a position where you can receive. So if you have a pitcher, let's say, and you're going to pour water into the pitcher, you have a glass, and you're going to pour water from the pitcher into the glass, where does the glass have to be positioned in order to receive the water? Above or below? What is it? Below. Okay. Unless you're on the moon or something. Unless there's zero gravity. Okay, yes. So you're going to have to pour it down. So the idea of humility, actually, one might think, I have to be the controller. I have to control every situation. And that means I have to be above everybody and so forth. But if you actually put yourself below, you're in really a better position. Because from that position, what's being poured out is something that you can receive. And if you keep yourself hungry, now there's a branch of the wisdom literature called the Vedas, which is called the Ayurveda. It's very popular nowadays. It's a way of balancing the various elements in your body so that you stay healthy. And it's basically a lot of herbology and diet and things like that. And so in that science of Ayurveda, the idea is that digestion is really important. When your digestion is strong, then the rest of the body can take in nutrients. It's receptive to them. But when your digestion closes down, then the rest of your body suffers. So in the same way, when you keep yourself hungry and humble, there's a way in which you can actually digest what you're getting. The kind of things, even if it's elementary or if it's advanced, when you're in a hungry state because you're humble, you're able to digest what you have. And I would suggest that this means that you're spiritually fit, you're healthy. And this keeps you in a very receptive mode, humility. So humility is good. And actually, it helps us to be receptive to all the gifts of the world. And interestingly enough, in the great wisdom literatures, like the Bhagavad Gita, one of the first elements in a list of 20 elements of how one discovers the mysteries of the world, the first on the list is called the Manitvam, which means to be humble. Be humble and open. So the second principle is called Akinchana. So please say Akinchana. You've just spoken Sanskrit today, so you can impress your friends. So Akinchana means something. And when you put an A in front of a word in Sanskrit, in many cases, it reverses the meaning. So if I were to put an A in front of the word kinchana, which means something, what does akinchana mean? Let's call on somebody. You probably already know Sanskrit, but let's ask you. It means nothing, or say it more literally, not something. Because kinchana is something, and now it's not something. So this akinchana principle is that I don't have anything. And we covered this a little bit earlier, but the principle is something that is mentioned in the wisdom literatures, that if you keep yourself in this state of akinchana, that I don't have anything, it means you're open for many other things to come in. And you're also grateful when they come. And I would just add to that that it's more important what we are than what we have. As we already established that the things we have are on loan, they come and go. But when we're more aware of what we actually are compared to the things that we have right now, we put our priorities in a way that we can get more, that we're receptive to the gifts of the world. Okay, so that's the first two principles. And I'll just take a little feedback on those, means a reflection or two, before I move on to the next four. Yes. Microphone in the back. Oh, go ahead. One, two. Okay. One, you go, and then she'll go.
Okay. For humility, I think for a person who's really confident and comfortable, humility is a great lesson. But for someone who's already suffering in incompetence or uncomfortably, I think, how can they accept something like humility? Wouldn't that make them more depressed?
Well, there's a difference between humility and lack of self-esteem. And you can see the difference because humility doesn't necessarily mean at all to be somebody's doormat, to tolerate bullying, and so forth. What it really means is to understand something, and that is I'm not the center. I'm not the center of everything, and I'm not the controller. If somebody has low self-esteem, on the other hand, they can fall into depression, and part of the reason that they're feeling like that is like, why can't I be the center? They're feeling like that. But if you position yourself as not the controller and not the center of attention everywhere, paradoxically, you become more receptive to all the gifts of the world, and you also become energized. The energy of lack of self-esteem is enervating. It takes away our energy. It makes us depressed. So you'll notice the symptoms are very, very different. Although externally it may seem like the same thing. Yes?
So I'm not sure if mine is more of a comment or a question.
Okay.
It goes back to the second closure and the second principle.
Yes.
I don't have anything. Because I thought the ultimate happiness and contentment is being happy with what you have. And if the mantra is I don't
Yeah, so yeah, very good, very good. And let me, this is a subtle point, but I think you'll like it. What does it mean when you feel content? What's a one word that you can say that would describe feeling content? And by the way, just as an aside, you can say the word content and content are spelled the same. So we are, as I began the talk, we are containers, right? I said that. Are you content? Because your content is right. But what is one word? I'll give you a hint. It starts with an E and ends with an H. That you could say, what?
Enough.
Good. Yes, enough. Everyone say enough.
Enough.
Do you have enough right now? Yes or no?
Yes.
Do you have enough money? So contentment means enough. And this is a point of balance that one can achieve through introspection, through balanced living and so forth, that one can actually experience in by being in the moment that I have enough. Does a squirrel have enough? Yes. Squirrels have enough? I mean, I have no idea, but I do watch the squirrels. And I'm thinking, like, they don't have insurance. They don't pay for any rent. I mean, I just saw them. Where was I recently? In Dallas. And I was walking along, and I was watching these squirrels, and I was just thinking, hey, you guys live outside. You know, I had to make all these arrangements to live inside, and then the squirrel's living outside in a hole somewhere, and he just picks up stuff. He said, where'd you get that? He's like, I don't know, it's right here. So there's this idea, like, enough. You know, is a nut, one nut enough, and so forth. When I come to that point, then I realize that at any given moment, I'm actually okay. Even in the middle of a catastrophe, if you check in with yourself and say, am I okay? The world's changing really fast around me, but I'm actually okay. I'm right here, right now. It's all right, even in the most dire circumstances. So this is something to be realized, and it's not artificial. It's not an imposition of the mind. My ideas about not having enough are an artificial imposition on the mind. Of course, we do have to, as you pointed out, there are various ways in which to be good stewards of the resources you get in the form of money and so forth, right? No, these are practical points. That part of life has to be there also. I'm not speaking simply philosophically. The balance has to be there because there is an slightly artificial standard in the society we live in now where you have to work a little harder just to have an apartment in San Francisco. It's classified as a luxury city, not an entry-level city, because you can't possibly move here on a small income and actually buy something. Okay, so the next principle is called the edge principle. Everyone say edge principle. And the proposition here is that progress lives outside my comfort zone. How does that sit with you? Let me go a little deeper. The edge is where all growth takes place. And how about this? Be comfortable outside your comfort zone. Be uncomfortable inside your comfort zone. So when you find yourself in your comfort zone, which is illusory anyway, because you're going to be moved out of it sooner or later anyway, you should feel uncomfortable because all progress takes place outside your comfort zone. Now, I'm not advocating wearing a horsehair shirt all day so that you feel totally uncomfortable or something like that, because I've heard in medieval times people performed all kinds of austerities to keep themselves uncomfortable. But what I am advocating is look for your edge, take risks. And what kind of risks? Find out what your most important values are. Identify them as you're doing this research now. And then take risks based on your highest value. Don't take risks for things you don't believe in or that, you know, it's just to advance, you know, your particular material situation in life. But find out what's really important to you inside and then really risk for that. That's where really powerful growth and receptivity takes place, in that risk zone, on the edge. How's that feel? It's good, right? Yeah. Okay, the next one, failure is the pillar to success principle. So this principle says that all progress is preceded by failure. And that leads to the concept of teachable moments. I propose, and it's just anecdotally, because I haven't done a double-blind study or anything like that, but the fact is that most of our progress takes place in teachable moments, and those come rarely in our life when we're really knocked off our plan, and we realize that we're not the controller. And have you ever had a teachable moment where you found yourself really maybe feeling kind of desperate or out of control, and then somehow or other you found your core there and you said, okay, let me start over, or let me just really find out what's most important in my life? Has that ever happened to any of you? Anything you'd like to share? Like people, let's say in a disaster like a flood, people go back to their homes And maybe they were worried. Well, I have a practical example. Sean Penn. Do you remember him? He used to be married to Madonna. And he lived in Malibu. And there was a big fire in Malibu, and everything burned down. And so afterwards, he was in an interview with Terry Gross, and he said, she said to him, "So your house burned down. You know, what was that like?" And he said, "Well, you know all those papers you've been looking for all the time? You didn't know where you put them. And there were like letters that you had to answer to people and all the stuff that you didn't know where to put it." And she said, "Yeah." He goes, "I don't have that anymore." when we're really pressed, and you'll notice that like maybe there's a big flood or something like that, you know, what do people save when they go in the house? They got 10 minutes to grab everything they possibly can. What do they save? Passport. Let's go a little higher than the passport. I mean, yes, passport, but kids and dogs, pigeons. Pigeons before passports, definitely. I mean, you know, I don't know if people keep pigeons as pets. But anyway, they'd take the bird, they'd take the alive thing. We naturally do this. We gravitate towards the thing that's most important. And we look for that. So in teachable moments, we come back to our core. Otherwise, I kind of get absorbed in all the life situation and all the worries and what if this happens and what if that doesn't happen, and there's combinations and permutations of millions of things that my mind's concocting, and I forget about being right here now. But when I really get socked, then I can come into my teachable moment. Now I'm proposing you don't have to get socked. You can actually come to that point of thinking like that and being totally receptive to the world. And in that state, being in a teachable moment all the time. But certainly when we do have circumstances that warrant it, we take advantage of that teachable moment. So the next one is the appreciating capacity principle. It's one of my favorites. And it's epitomized by this quotation from Voltaire. Appreciation is a wonderful thing. It makes what is excellent in others belong to us as well. Everyone please say it together. Appreciation is a wonderful thing. It makes what is excellent in others belong to us as well. There's another saying that I like. It's kind of witty. It says, whatever you appreciate, appreciates. And that is, if you put your attention into something and you appreciate it, it grows in your life. So this principle says that if you're able to appreciate others' good qualities rather than become envious of them, is it possible to see someone that's more expert than yourself and to think, why him not, why not me? Is it possible? Okay, I'm glad it's not just me. So see somebody's very expert, has good qualities, and I can think like, you know, I wish that guy wasn't so successful. I wish that woman wasn't, you know, the words she was saying weren't so eloquent. It makes me look bad. Because they're so good, now I look worse. And how will I ever be like that? But the actual principle is that if you're able to clean that envy off the mirror and appreciate what they're saying, say, this is wonderful, a quality that this person has, then it's like the contents of that person's heart and the hard work they put in to come to that point, it actually becomes available to me now. It's an amazing principle of receptivity, but the fact of the matter is, when I open my heart and appreciate somebody else who has some good quality, I get that. I can also take in that quality. Whereas if I become envious, it blocks it all, and I don't get anything. I walk away completely empty. I'm just thinking like, why him, not me? And I, by the way, I hope he crashes on the way home. So there's one less, qualified person in the world. Okay, and then the final principle, and we'll take a couple of, well, is the sincerity principle. Then when we have integrity, which means my inside matches my outside, I'm not saying one thing, doing another, but I try to have congruency and match my inside with my outside, especially in my speech. And when I have that, it builds trust in my environment. People notice. Humans are smart. Animals are too. They notice when you're scamming. And I see this all the time on my iPhone. People call me and I don't answer, but it says a scam likely. Do you all get that on your phone? I think there's a lot of people doing, you know, kinds of scams. And it's a scam also to try to present yourself as something you're not. This is insincerity. Sincerity comes from the word sincere, which means without wax. Because previously, when people were mining marble, it became very popular at a certain time. The marble that didn't have big cracks in it became more sellable. And so people then started putting wax in the cracks to make it look more valuable than it was. So don't do that. Be who you are. Be naturally who you are and be sincere. And when you are, you build trust in your environment and people that are very much likely to want to impart to you the great wisdom in their lives. So these are a few concepts that we rushed through because we only had an hour together today, and we're actually even over time. However, if you want to give one last reflection, just to help close things up, then you can let me know. And then also right after this, when everyone leaves or not, I'm having a mantra meditation circle, as we do traditionally here, just to teach you a few techniques that you can take home for mantra meditation. So does anyone want to give one last reflection? Yes?
I've been thinking this since I walked in, and I was wondering if you would touch on it. But so I guess one thing I think about is when you open yourself to be more receptive, the idea would be to be receptive to the good and the abundance that's around us. How do you not become more receptive to the opposite? Negative,
not good,
to the lack of abundance. So how do you, I don't know, do you have any tips? Or, yeah, filter.
What was the word?
Filter. Filter the good.
Yeah, she said it. That's not, nice. Yeah. That's what I was thinking too. You said it? Filter? Yeah. I mentioned it when we were doing our introspection that, I'll give a very technical term here, but we are units of attention. When you think of consciousness, what is consciousness? You could say, sort of in a clinical way, we're units of attention. And I propose that the only real asset that we have, since we already established that everything else we have is on loan, but the only thing we get to keep always is our choice of where to place our attention. And becoming receptive doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be overrun by, you know, things that are negative. Because when you're more receptive, you actually are more aware that you get a chance to choose between one thing and the next. Because all kinds of things are coming in all the time. But there's a point at which we also interpret things. So it's not what happens to us in life that actually causes us pain and worry. It's what we think about what's happening to us. And so most of the things that happen to us, I'm interpreting because of the state of my receptivity. I interpret it like, this person hates me. When actually all they did was they were, they didn't smile at you because they were worried about a test they were going to take. For the rest of the day, I interpret that as something negative, right? And also, it can open up to more of the negative things in the world, but it tends to turn into a more positive emotions. Rather than us becoming fearful, we become compassionate when we're more receptive and refined in the way that we think. Because there are things going on all the time that are very concerning, to say the least, right? Are you with me on that? So, but it's how we process them. And if we're more receptive, we're able to process them and turn them into something that's much more valuable to us and to the people around us as well. Did that help?
Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. You know, oh yes. Before we lose a war of attrition, we'll take our last.
Very interesting point.
Quick.
Though, but it really aligns with I know that, right?
Yes.
So it goes to how do we know the negative that we look at negative?
How what?
How do we know that it's good or bad and so on? And it comes with I know that. It becomes very possible, but in everything, it comes as a package.
Yes.
You can find everything. So sometimes, at least for me, filtering it out,
yes,
can really fall into the category of I know that. Because we may not.
Yes, And that's reasonable. And we've talked in other classes about the power of deliberation. The word deliberate has the word Libra, means the pan scales. You're weighing one thing against the other. If you deliberate about things carefully before you go out and meet the world, like I have a, you know the admonition, don't shop when you're hungry? Did you ever make that mistake? Yeah, you know what it's like, right? Okay, so also, don't go out into the world until you've deliberated. Don't go out in the world, otherwise you expose yourself to everything and you'll just take it all in. But if you deliberate ahead of time and say, what is my highest value? What is my goal? And you also have centered yourself. You've seen that I'm my life, I'm not the life situation around me. Then when you go out into the world, there's all these different choices, situations, and so forth. We're not trying to avoid those. We're just trying to filter them properly, like you said. And when you've deliberated, then you can be deliberate. Again, the word's spelled the same way. Deliberate, deliberate. Spelled the same way. But when you deliberate, then you can be deliberate in what you do. And one of the aspects to the word deliberate means, or deliberate, means you consider the consequences of your actions. That's one of the points. So the idea is do it ahead of time. Be in a prepared state. That makes you receptive to the things that are coming in, and you're able to choose wisely between them when they do come. Okay? You've been the most amazing audience, I think, ever. And actually, you know, we're all together, so it's not really audience and speaker, but it's been a very edifying period for me. Thanks for giving so much of yourselves and coming in and giving your valuable time. And if you want anybody wants to stay afterwards just for a few minutes, I'm going to just do an introductory course on the mantra meditation, which is an advanced form of introspection and meditation that you can do at home. And you're welcome to do that. So thank you very much. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Shekhar, for this enlightening talk today here. Like he mentioned already, we will have a mantra meditation circle where you all can get an experience of mantra meditation. And we also have a bi-weekly meditation sits in as a group of conscious living at Salesforce. If you are not a part of the chatter group, please sign in or send me an email. We also have a snack, and Vaisheshika, his business cards are here, so if you want to reach out to him later through emails or his website, so feel free to grab the card as well on your way back. Thank you very much again.